in Aquitania. I'll show you the tombstone, he said. No, not the tombstone, the Flamen and Dunver. Questor and district chief, Verus, having acquitted himself in Augustus's presence of the charge that had been laid upon him, obtained for the nine peoples their separation from the Gauls. Back home from Rome, he dedicates this altar to the genius of the place. Wind blows down from the Meseta. Warm rain drifts in from the ocean. Fir trees brush the snow line. High hill beaches hold coldness in their foliage. Heather and tough grass grip the sandy edge. On flakes of sandstone and pebbles and fragments of bone, they draw birds and deer and hares and horses, salmon and seals. Maybe somebody wandering in the hills raises that hoarse cry that starts down guttural low and winds up whinnying high. After the ice, the sea rises, rivers swollen, low valleys flooded, all along the littoral, lagoons and marshes, the coast seeping with wetness, dripping caves. People perched on the hills and ridges, keeping watch. Basque-Azilian lasts into the Atlantic phase. Maluka speaks of a vida neolítica con una economía de recolectores. The face of the coast wrapped in mist. Maybe down to the shore in winter, red deer went down then to feed on seaweed and coastal grass. A diet of deer meat and shellfish, acorns and hazelnuts. Clearing forests by burning, marsh dwellings. Early words for weaving, tilling the soil, the same as in Caucasian. Old stories, the pagans grew wheat at the mouths of their caves. Sub-boreal, sub-Atlantic, onto sheep, cattle, goats, and pigs. As the Basco said in the Pyrenees, my father keeps sheep, his father keeps sheep, his father. Those black-headed sheep with the curling horns that have moved from winter to summer between the valley and the mountain pasture from time immemorial. Deep are the trails on these vales and hills. Maybe at the beginning the whole tribe moved in a nomad way. Then some went, some stayed, transhumans. Big stone burials and shelters. Dolmens along tracks, ridges, watersheds, crests. Open views to the east. Cromlechs higher up, windy peaks, rites of different types, eastwards to catch the dawning sun and give protection from the westerlies. Real writing had deserted Rome, Virgil and Ovid long gone, and went on in the Greek-minded cities of Provence, or in a quieter way, here in Aquitania, where the stone world still spoke to the ocean, and mind was open to wind. Ausonius to Theon, you who plough the sandy lands of the Atlantic, and to Paulus, where the swollen waters of the Garuna provoke the sea. The rhythm continued. Men were there to see to things and draw the lines. The landscape grew. It was possible to speak of peopled place and cultured space. Quiet Aquitania on the verge of ocean, brought forth from work and from meditation. This morning at Gaillon, I dedicate this inadequate poem to the Duncanation. The Duncanation, little pink flower, its last home here on these Aquitaine sands. Little pink flower, carrying the whole of history in its slender roots. A world in miniature, and religion of a sort, destroyed by fools and motorbikes in the name of sport. Mountain study. Why does one study? For the white gathered element, having shaken the letters to become unlettered, living in the unlettered light. Every now and then I go up into the mountains, fire and snow, trudging for hours along the black line of the river, following it right to the crest. Or, when the snow's gone, moving up through the forest to the thin grass and the rocks, the high country. Up there in the stillness, thinking of nothing, only the body moving. Extraordinary ontological territory. Or in my study with the books of calligraphy, drinking tea or white wine and slowly leafing through the pages. Song of the Diaphanous Mirror, 1,000-character essay, account of the retreat of quietude, the pavilion of the drunken old man, treatise on understanding. But the finest piece of calligraphy I've ever set eyes on, back a few years on Taiwan, is a letter of 30 characters written by Wang Cixi in a tough winter of the 4th century to a good friend of his, asking him how he was faring in these cold days. A piece of calligraphy which, under the title of Clear Sky Just Before Snow, changed hands for 1,000 years, each of its possessors renaming his study in its honor, so that for 1,000 years, somewhere in China, there was a Just Before Snow study. If I named this study of mine after the pair of scrolls hanging in on the wall, 7-mile streams shine bright outside, 10,000 hills, autumn view, it would have to be something like The Study of the 7-mile Stream or The Study of the 10,000 hills. In The Study of the 10,000 hills, reading, those who know truth are not the equals of those who love it, and those who love it are not the equals of those who take active delight in it. Also writing, all morning this quiet thing happening, taking shape, unshaping, reshaping between me, the language, and the snow, trying adjectives, so many adjectives, running through verbs, a fine flurry of verbs. What name for it all now, midday, and so little left, only cool, stillness, soft, drifting glow. When, opening a Chinese grammar, red binding still holding the smell of Glasgow, my eyes fall on Ta Yu Xie, great rain, snow. Movements in the snowy silence. What that line is and this. No concern now with sense, only a calligraphy, a nameless and meaningless writing, to say without saying, the flurried fullness of, the inner murmuring of, the snowy silence. Labrador. Another dawn out from Greenland. Whales bellowing the icy sea, and a vast sky resounding with wind. Once more I felt that breadth of mind like being drunk, but this was colder and more clear than anything that might come out of a jug. It was what I'd always lived for, what I always will live for, till they throw me into the trough of the waves I was used to dance over. There are those who delight in a storm of swords, and those who make public speech with words. These are the warriors and the governors. I have preferred other ways, the lonely ways of the sky of sands, the gull path. In all my lonely ongoings, I have thought of many things. I have thought of the earth and its beginnings, when time was a sequence of cold dawns, and space was full of the wings of hallucinated birds. I have dreamed of a primal place, a place of rocks, quick streams, and emptiness. Each morning, the sun rising in a chill sea of the east, and throughout the long day, throbbing above the rocks, above the waters. The earth, then, was a nameless place. I have been in love with nameless places. Now there are too many names. Norway of the Blue Streams is rank with names. The Hebrides and even Greenland, names, 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 and a welter of angry clamoring. It was time to move further west. And so another dawn out from Greenland, and still no other land in sight. Only the green waves and the wind, and a vision strong in the mind. I also named a place. A place of great rocks and the sun glinting on them. A place filled with a rush and a flowing of water, as I call it, the marvelous shore. I lived the winter there. It was a time of white silence. I carved a poem on the rocks in praise of winter and a white silence, the best runes I ever cut. Men with long eyes and high cheekbones came to visit me. I gave them cloth, they gave me skins. There was peace between us. When spring came, all the streams running with light and the big river reflecting the sky, I traveled further south into a land of forest. I met red men there, dressed like birds. I was aware of a new land, a new world, but I was loath to name it too soon. Simply content to use my senses, feeling my way step by step into the reality. I was no longer Christian, nor yet had I gone back to Thor. There was something else calling to me, calling me out, and waiting perhaps to be called. Something sensual and yet abstract, something fearsome and yet beautiful. It was beyond me, and yet more myself than myself. I thought of talks in Norway, the talk of poets and of thinkers. I thought of high talk in the Hebrides. Here was no place for Christ or Thor. Here the earth worked out its destiny of rocks and trees and sunlight and darkness, worked out its destiny in silence. I tried to learn the language of that silence, more difficult than the Latin I learned in Bergen or the Irish in Dublin. A whole new field in which to labor and to think. And with every step I took, I knew a singular health, mind every day more sharp, more clear. I hazarded some more names, after weighing them carefully, each one, trying them out in my mind and on my tongue. Great Whale River, Eskimo Point, Indian House Lake, Caribou Pass. But still no name for the whole. I was willing to name the parts, but not the whole. A man needs to fix his knowledge, but he also needs an emptiness in which to move. I lived and moved as I'd never done before. Became a little more than human even, knew a larger identity. The tracks of caribou in the snow, the flying of wild geese, the red autumn of the maple tree bitten by frost, all these became more real to me, more really me than my very name. I found myself still saying things like, at one with the spirit of the land. But there was no spirit. None. That was outworn language, and this was a new world, and my mind was almost a new mind. There was no such thing as spirit. Only the blue tracks in the snow, the flying of the geese, the frost-bitten leaf. Religion and philosophy, what I'd learned in the churches and the schools, were all too heavy for this traveling life. All that remained to me was poetry, but a poetry as unobtrusive as breathing, a poetry like the wind and the maple leaf that I spoke to myself moving over the land. I am an old man now, an old man, very old. I have scratched these runes on a rock to be my testament. Perhaps no man will read them, and that is no matter. They will stand on a rock beside the scratchings of the ice, open to wind and weather. In the Nashvac night, a summer night in the Labrador, in the twilight watching countless birds settled and asleep, only a few still in the wing, that passing flight of Sabine gulls. Is this a death or the prelude to another life? The question is all too heavy. Bringes into this rippling silence like a bull into China. Better simply to wait, taking pleasure in the twilight. Tongues of water from the Labrador, running up the bays and fjords, lapping against the Archean rocks, will see the poem beyond the questioning. The birds are asleep. Geese, duck, brant, teal, plover, all are asleep, as though this land were one great sanctuary. Here, halfway between the old world and the new, a stepping over place, a place to rest on the long trail of the migrations, north, south, east, and west. A place to rest, and yet I am restless, walking here in the stillness. Walking in the stillness, halfway between the old world and the new, trying to move in deeper, ever deeper, into a white world neither old nor new. White world neither old nor new. The bird path, feeling it out. Dawn comes with the cry of the wild goose. Brandon's last voyage. Entendre ici de Saint-Brandon, qui fut né de vers Occident, qui 7 ans erra par la mer, pour plus de tes dieux et amers. It was a stony kingdom on the west coast of Ireland, with the wind wailing and the roaring of Atlantic breakers, with strange men wandering and murmuring, Ishi Modrui Christ Magdei, my druid is Christ, the Son of God. One had always wished to wander further, Brandon by name, and a name it was that had the sea in it, the breaking of waves and the memory of a poem the old men would speak on winter nights. Brand thinks a great marvel it is to sail a boat on the clear sea. Brand's eyes see the waves of the sea waves shine in summer as far as the eyes of Brand can see. Brand loves to look upon the white sea broken by oars. There are men who are always ready to throw everything to the winds, men who can look on life coldly and stake everything in a gesture. Brandon was one of those. God for him was the great gesture that had set everything in motion, also a great idea sailing through space brighter than the sun and the moon. Brandon built him a boat. He built it of 17 places, making first a framework of pliant wood, covering it with bull hides tanned in oak, smearing the hides with grease and resin, a boat light as a bird to ride the sea. When the boat was ready, firm and true, he gathered men about him, saying, this will be no pleasure cruise, rather the wildest of wild goose chases around the rim of the world and further, a peregrination in the name of God and the promise of white martyrdom. They pull away from Ireland, heading north, oars dipping into blue water amid a caterwauling of gulls. The going was good and the rhythm sure. To the east was the land of the White Hills, and they passed by Islay and the Isle of Tyree, then Barra, the Uist, till they came to Lewis. At the Isle of Lewis they went ashore, walked round the ancient stones of Caernarfon, then headed again for the open sea. The weather went grey, the sea grew gurly. Long days of rain, snow, sleet, and wind, surely this must be the very mouth of hell. Brandon at the prow, crying into the greyness, Ishi Modrui Christ Magdei, the words lost in the grey wastes. Never letting up his holy chanting, he kept his eyes skinned for another island. Brandon's mind was full of islands. He had been born and raised among islands. The Hebrides he knew by heart, the Orkneys and the Faroes too. The world for him was all islands, and weren't the heavens themselves so made? He was looking for an island now, but so far north he'd never come. The world here was at an end. Here there was only sea and wind. At length he let loose one of his crows, and the crow made straight for the island of birds. Ka, kayagaya, kia, kia, branta, 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 grak, grak, grak. That island was noisier than a church. All the birds of the ocean had foregathered there, gulls and redshanks and cormorants, kittiwakes, terns and guillemots, geese and gannets and skuas. Some perched on pinnacles of rock, others flying wildly about. Ah, it was a goodly sight. and music in Brandon's ears. They pulled up the boat on a bit of beach and, turning it into a shelter, settled down for the night. When Brandon awoke in the morning, he was looking askew in the eye, and it looked for all the world like his old teacher Mernach away back there in Munster. "Excuse me, Skewer," he said. "Can you tell me how far we are from paradise?" The Skewer gave a sturdy beat of his wings and stalked silently off. "I thought so," said Brandon. Ah, it was beautiful, the northern blue and the clear white curling of the surf. Every mile was a broad blue page of vellum, and Brandon was working out the words. He thought in Latin and he thought in Gaelic, murmuring farspa, in deserto, trying for a freshness never found before. Brandon the voyager would be Brandon the poet, only if he could write a poem brighter and stronger than all other poems, a poem full of the rough sea and the light, the words for it, the words for a dawning. To build a boat is good, to sail the faraway seas is good, but to write a poem in which the minds of men could sail for centuries, that was his ambition now with a long lifetime behind him. Brandanus Laboriosus, they had called him, when he was a busy abbot of monasteries. True, he had always worked like ten, Brandon the worker, Brandon the mariner. He had his reputation, sure. But he'd felt it over there on Iona, when he'd been in talk with that Columba, the one who sorted poetry like a book, that somehow he was out beyond the pale of the literary folk, lacking their polish, their finesse. Columba the dove and Brandon the crow. Well, it wasn't polish and finesse he wanted. It was a freshness and a force and a beauty that they'd never know. Further and further they pulled away into the white unknown. Melville at Arrowhead. The white whale had made much headway. Neither had Marty. As for the ambiguities, it was a total flop, and there was nothing more to be hoped for from Hawthorne. So he'd retired to the country, a supernatural retreat, sitting smoking by the chimney, thinking, with always that sense of immensity and the physical, metaphysical thing still raging in his brain, but he'd try and take it easy. He liked it best when the snow piled up at Arrowhead. That removed any temptation to try and go somewhere else. Sure, his wife pestered him a little. He should take this pill or that pill, which would be good for him. And his daughters, well, they were pleasant enough young ladies. But what could they know went on back of those blue eyes? Sitting there by his chimney, raising smoke screens and thinking of impenetrable Japans. Now and then you get up and finger some object, the head of a harpoon maybe, a piece of ivory, that red back of a crab picked up on the beach at Nukuhiva. Or else you'd look at some map, it's worn red and yellow and blue, and the ocean currents would be flowing again through his veins, a white path and a green sea, a quiet lagoon, a spouting of blood, masses of blubber, and Plato's ghost in the forecastle. What could any citizen know about his questing? What could any parlor poet know about white whales or unmapped archipelagos? Forget them. Life wouldn't last long anyway. Soon his bones would be joining the snow in the Berkshires and the red leaves in the autumn woods. Never had any regrets. But that brain of his kept working beyond all simple wisdom, grappling with uncouth cosmologies, groping along endless blind alleys, as though nothing could ever please it but the vision of some unheard-of poet. Herman, supper's ready. The Ocean Way. Travelling up the coast that bright blue autumn morning with a head full of Irish whiskey, a certain drunkenness makes thought come easy. What matters, I was saying to myself, nothing human, not sure. It was one of those supernihilistic journeys only an extravagant Scot or maybe a Greek or a Russian can know. Bonjour, beauté, I said, in passing to the world. Sea cloud in the sky. ozeanisches Gefühl. Bordeaux, Bourse Maritime, Danse Consulat, Bar de la Gironde, Le Tampico, Atlantic Bar. A whiff of dark red wine. And the big river, mother of waters, flowing slowly west in a golden haze. Mama Rose, foie gras, farewell to Gascogne. It was September. Red apples all along the road. Night gathering, the waves darkening. Kingfisher. A round white moon over La Rochelle. On the Place de Lancre, an electric guitar, and a slim girl singing Early Woman, Wind in the Tamari, Cool Wind in the Tamari. Don't poke that joint, my friend, pass it over to me. Red lamp out in the harbor waters. Next morning, the flatlands of Vendée, low houses, marshes, fish, oysters, salt, white wind, white light. What whiteness will you add to this whiteness? High bridge over the Loire at Saint-Nazaire, Chantier de l'Atlantique. La Roche-Bernard, a full-sailed yacht coming silently down the Vilaine between the steep rock banks. Eros, Logos, Cosmos. Armorican territory, the Dumnonian coast, a sea-shaken house. Salutations to Duns Scott, Scotus Ergena, and old Pelagius. Vita maxima contemplativa. With a swirling center, fire wave, lightning flower. The house at the head of the tide. 5 miles out of town, you come to a place called the White Field. Two wings and a whiteness, ideogram for perseverance. Moorland, a rocky coast, and 100 islands. The sea often green, girdly green, but every now and then a sharp breath-catching blue with always breakers. Peace. Peace in the breakers. A place this of darkness and of light. Darknesses and lights in quick succession. The sun reveals, cloud conceals, and always a music of wind and moor, tide and shore, and a silence. A fifth quartet. We must be still and still moving for a further union, a deeper communion through the dark cold and the empty desolation, the wave cry, the wind cry, the vast waters of the petrel and the porpoise. A country lane lined with gorse. This house of stone lined with 1,000 books that speak of ideas, islands, according to an order as yet only dimly apprehended, vaguely sensed. Chaoticism. Where are we? Where are we going? One who has thought his way through the thicket says it is a question of moving into a new place, a clearing. We speak here in terms of Atlantica. A breathing and a breath. Pelagian space. What was left out and behind when the roads were built and the codes of command crammed into the mind. What was left out becoming more and more faintly articulate. Still there in the gull cry, the wave clash, those darknesses, those lights, but who hears? Who sees? Who can say? Another mindscape. Moving out then into the landscape, walking in the white of the morning, walking and watching, listening. Yellow flowers tossing in the wind, a crow on a branch caw-cawing, the rivulet reflecting the sky in blue-gray ripples, white beach rack, the high gate and snootiness of oyster catchers, a blue crab groping in a pool, bright shell. The notes accumulate. Towards a writing that is more in view than the art of making verse out of blunt generalities and personal complaining. Atlantic archipelago, and a sense of something to be gathered in. The mind gropes like a blue crab in a pool, tosses in the wind, reflects the sky in ripples, flies high, leaves signs in the sand, lies recklessly strewn at the edge of the tide. Comes back to the books, the many manuscripts. Scriptorium in candida casa, altus prosator. Binoculars focused also on the red-roofed abandoned sardine factory at the tip of the promontory, some kind of homology. A place to work from, to work it all out. A place in which to house a strangeness. This strange activity. Philosophy, poetry, practice, theory. from an accumulation of data to the plural poem Beyond the Generality.